The shocking editorial in the Observer newspaper spelt it out with stark clarity. Commenting on the plight of the children in the world, it carried these statistics. Of 100 children born each minute in developing countries, 15 will die within their first year. And a quarter of the survivors suffer malnutrition during infancy. At any given moment, an estimated 10 million of the world's young children are suffering from extreme protein malnutrition, and another 200 million are inadequately fed. Half of the 15 million under fives who live in the poor countries each year are killed by malnutrition or associated diseases. It's a tragic fact of life that when governments fall or tyranny goes on the march, it's the children, the innocent ones, who get the rawest deal. Whether it's Pharaoh, as we read, ordering the final solution, Herod massacring the innocents, or the children of Hitler's Holocaust, or the ragged, wide-eyed child, confused and thin and vulnerable, they're the ones who suffer most terribly. The iconic photograph of a child washed up on the beach stunned the world, became a vivid and shaming symbol of man's inability to sort himself out wherever and wherever we see them. The grief-stricken orphans of Hiroshima, a burned child running from the napalm bombs in Vietnam, the Palestinian refugees huddled in the pipes in Jordan, the terrified children of Ukraine, children fleeing some African civil war or another, the children of the Troubles taught hate and fear in equal measure, the limbless children of Bosnia, the victims of indiscriminate mining of vast tracts of Amazonian land. Wherever you look, history has been written in the tears of the children. Pharaoh's self-interested, paranoid reaction to the growing strength of the Hebrews within the boundaries of his national frontiers, his fear of the foreigners threatening, as it seemed to him, the security of the nation, peels out the dark tone of man's capacity for cruelty, and it's mostly men. His plan for ethnic cleansing, genocide, sounds a familiar note. We know how it works. Power without morality, controlled by neither love nor humanity, refusing the constraints of any higher moral obligation. History is crammed with such moments and such people. This is what happens when naked power has free rein to function in a moral vacuum. And we all know how possible it is, as happens here in the story from Exodus, how possible it is for the machinery of state, the energies and resources of state power to be organised into the processes that make for the efficient crushing and elimination of those the state decides to dispense with and destroy. It happens all the time and in many, many lands. BOSS, the KGB, SAVAK, the Stasi, the Gestapo, with meticulous lists drawn up, efficient filing systems designed to make sure that no one escapes the net. The state can be very thorough and focused when it comes to killing. Right back to the state-managed judicial murder at a place called Calvary. All the facilities and systems of state power geared up to be the effective and ruthless oppressors and intimidators and removers. And the children are the ones on the receiving end of that evil, their emotions battered, their futures stolen, their confidence swept away. They have no idea why these things are being done, why the shells are crashing around them and the bullets from the helicopter gunships are taking their parents, and why they're always so hungry. So that the terrible blasphemy is perpetrated on generations of children who grow up thinking that this is what it's about, this thing called life. It is about want and filth and danger and disease and never having enough to eat and never having a chance. All they know is the relentless catalogue of death, destruction and terror. And terrible though it is to say, they must wish sometimes they had never been born. If this is all there is, grubbing in the garbage like a stray dog, this terrible sin of tyranny, unrestrained power, the lust for power, and the brutal means to use it to get, to keep that power. whether it's a dissident being hauled out of their bed by this regime or that, leaving their child without a parent, shocked and afraid and bewildered, or whether it's some Kalashnikov-wielding African warlord burning a village to the ground and killing everyone of a different ethnic background, it's always the children who get it worst. So the ghastly plight of the Hebrew children back in ancient Egypt, under threat of extermination by a frightened and insecure despot, shouldn't really surprise us. It happens all the time. We do it all the time, we men, and I say it again, it's mostly men. We human beings, supposedly the supreme achievement of nature, the pinnacle of development and the fruits of history, we seem to have spent the centuries brutalising or neglecting the children. Little wonder our world is so often such a botched up, broken-backed abattoir of a place, when within each new generation are the effects of the mistakes, the follies, the fanaticism of previous generations, the sins of the fathers visited upon the children to the third and fourth generation. Oh yes. The first chapter of Exodus should at the very least leave us with a bad taste in our mouth and a sense of shame and wonder as we are forcibly reminded of the terrible truths of the human condition and that propensity to make things ugly and shameful. It should be a reality check, lest we think we're doing all right and we're well on the way to progress and perfection. Clearly not. Clearly not. However, a seed of hope, and it's just a seed, is found within the terrible story of Pharaoh's scheme to wipe out the Hebrews. First, the midwives who fear God, and then Moses' own mother, say, no, we won't. We won't be part of this. We won't be part of this. And they take on the system, and like a glimmer of sunlight through the unrelenting gloom, we see the indomitable human spirit, which combines with typical human ingenuity to buck the system, sabotage the wickedness, and save the day, salvage some shred of dignity for the human spirit by courage and imagination. Moses' mother, her affection, her respect for life, her fear of God, lead her to defiance, to take the measures that will safeguard her son. So here's the good news. The individual human spirit always emerges in the darkness, breaks through oppression like a brave green shoot, pushing its fragile life through the bleak concrete jungle of hatred and horror to bring hope, to reveal the real truth about the human identity, character and spirit. It happens in the darkest places, in the AIDS hospitals of Soweto, where caring nurses and doctors spent themselves in sacrificial compassion. It emerged during the terrible dark night that was Germany under the Nazis, in the gulags and camps of brutal communist dictatorship, in the vileness of massacres and tortures in Africa's countless civil wars. People stand tall and say, I will not be this person. I will not do this thing. I will walk towards the light, and I will not let this abomination define my humanity, nor indeed allow it to define the human race. It seems to be the ongoing story of the human condition, the sometimes unbearable tension between dark and unbridled state power, with its vicious, insatiable appetite for intimidation, bullying and terror, a chilling willingness to hurt and damage and break in the name of ideology, and standing against that, behind the barricades of truth and compassion, justice and liberty, the individual, the tiny, insignificant, pathetic, hopeless, doomed, courageous individual, with a deep abiding conviction, faith, if you will, that brutality and inhumanity, raw power, are not the only options, are not the only thing to say about the world and how it can be. It's a bit of a historical cliche for groups to claim, as so many do, that God is on their side. But the Bible is clear, and we need apologise to no one for this one. The Bible is clear whose side God is on, by whose side he stands. Let my people go. The whole theme of Exodus is a cosmic command with a global reach, a truth that confronts oppression wherever it is found, a cosmic command, universal in its application. Let my people go, whoever they are, wherever they are. God identifies himself with the oppressed, the enslaved, the broken, the dehumanized, the prisoner of conscience, the trafficked sex worker, the suffering child, the hopeless, the helpless, the victim, whoever they are, wherever they are. They have God on their side. There was a time when it might have seemed to some that the church had forgotten that, that it had become the bastion of the establishment, whatever form that establishment took, and that the church too often opted to support the status quo, too often opted to support the status quo, regardless of how strong and wrong that status quo might be. Sometimes the church has brought shame on its name by lying low, taking the line of least resistance for the sake of a quiet life, even in the midst of an oppressive regime, refusing to ask too many awkward questions. Yet at other times, and in other places, the church has consistently shown itself to be a church that stands alongside the oppressed and dares to speak out for the voiceless, regardless of the cost of that stance. Whether that's Christian Aid with its uncompromising challenge to the rich nations, calling them to be fair in their trade dealings with those who have no power at all, or Christians who've risked their very life to speak out against injustice and prejudice, or the Archbishop of Canterbury embracing the anger of the moneymakers as he calls for social concern to be a driver in political decision making, or Pope Francis robust in his critique of the financial structures that allow the rich to become richer on the backs of the poor. Sad to say, the voice is still needed. Stances still need to be taken. The challenge presented to us by the story of a woman hiding her baby in the bulrushes is to oppose any system that is cruel, unjust and oppressive, to stand with the individual spirit in its sometimes nakedness and vulnerability, in the clear conviction that in so doing, we stand with God and he stands with us. This is who we are. This is what we do. The church. Love in action. Love in action.